On the Pace, brought to you by Bling It On and For a Reason. To book your mare this season, go to culbertyequine.com.au.
On Racing HQ.
Racing HQ.
Racing HQ. Here's
On the Pace.
Smolder lifting too strong. Smolder. The Kiwi has won the end of the minion.
But it is all Lazarus clear at Tiger Tara. And once again, Lazarus has arisen.
And it is time for On the Pace at 24-11. Jason Bonington this morning filling in for us. Morning, Jace.
Morning, Cozzy. It is 25-11, as you mentioned, and Greg Hayes off gallivanting in America, as you'd expect, doing the big jobs over there with the World Drivers' Championship not too far away. But we're going to look at Redwood Day. We're going to do a review of Redwood Day pretty much here. Zach Phillips, Chris Alford, Brent Lilly, and Greg Sugars, hopefully our guests across the next 25 minutes or half an hour. But we'll start with the young one first, young Zachary Phillips. Are you on the line there, Zachy boy?
Yeah, good morning, boys. How are we?
Sound like you're in a wind tunnel there, Zach. But
I'm just coming off the track. It'll get better.
He's just trying to prove that he works out there, because I'm coming off the track. Yeah. I'm coming off. He's only been on there for 15 minutes, probably. But look, I want to start from the start. First of all, congratulations on Sunday, Unbelu. You gave the big salute going over the line. It must have been a great day.
Yeah, it was. It was really rewarding. I mean, our day started off terrible. I mean, I think first three trotters of the day galloped, couldn't get one to trot. So leading into the Derby, the confidence levels were, well, they couldn't really get much lower. And, I was sort of a bit down in the dumps. And, you know, to cross the line first in such a time-honoured event with, a great filly, it was just it was a bit of a weight off the back.
Let's start from the start, Zach, because I'm not sure how many people outside of the trots probably know the story. I rocked up to Tabcorp Park. I think I started working there pretty much when the joint opened 7 or 8 years ago, and there was a young bloke wandering around, giving people tips, swaggering about, who I didn't realise at the time was only about 14 years of age, 13 or 14 years of age, named Zach Phillips, who already seemed like he was an established member of the crew down there. Tell us how you got involved in the trots, and you must have fallen in love with it at an incredibly early age if you were already a big dog at 14.
Yeah, I don't have any family background in harness racing, as you know. My dad was good friends in a trainer of Robbie O'Connell, and he just used to take me out to the stables of a weekend, and as they say, I just caught the buzz at an early age and sort of never really thought about doing anything else, and just sort of took it from there.
You picked up your first drive as early as you possibly could back in March 2012, and then you had your first win in July. And I guess people from outside the game, as you've mentioned, not everyone inside the game knows who you are, Zach, but outside the game, they'd say this bloke's a little bit of an overnight success. He's 21 years of age. He's driving Group 1 winners. Well, it even seemed like that, I guess, for those inside the game in a way, because it was only November when you drove, I think, Lightning Joy to that Gumbower Trotters Cup success, and all of a sudden your name's up in lights. It's all happened very quickly in 6 or 7 months after your first steer. But, you know, even at 21 years of age, it doesn't all happen easily. You probably had a little lull after that before you became attached to a few major stables. So it hasn't been just, turn up and win Group 1s, has it, mate?
And that's just life in general. I mean, every successful person in life, you have to work to get what you get. And, harness racing's not different. As hard as each other, and it's, as I said, everyone gets out of bed early in the morning and works to get somewhere in life, and in harness racing we're no different. But I've been very fortunate. I've worked hard, but I've had a lot of great support from some big stables, and if you don't get the support from big stables, it doesn't matter how much ability you got, you just can't make it in this sport. So although I've worked hard, I've been very fortunate.
Now, of course, you've been associated with a number of quality stables, worked with the Sugars early doors. Ross was a big supporter of yours. Paul and Kari Miles, we know, are big supporters of yours. Adam Kelly as well, you've driven a lot of winners for. But this association you have with Anton Galeno that's brought you your Group 1 successes. Talk about how you first became, paired with Anton, whether you went and tapped him on the shoulder and said, I'd love to have a drive for you, or if he came to you, and how it all began.
I was pretty innocent, really. I think he had a 3-year-old trotter. It was called Silicon Valley.
Yep.
And he had, he had 4 or 5 in the race. And he just started ringing me up and asked me to drive it. I said, yeah, no worries. I think the first 5 drives for him, I galloped every single thing. And I thought, oh, well, this bloke's, I won't last long with this fella, because he obviously is going to start start, I think I got no idea. But then I got on a horse called My Shamir, and I won on her, and then just strung a couple together for him, and I was sort of blessed to get the drive on Umbalaler, and it's just sort of spiraled from there.
And it just seems like there's some good chemistry between you two, obviously, because, I mean, this is part of the game. You have drivers and you have big stables, and sometimes they click and sometimes they don't. But you seem to really be clicking with these horses. As you mentioned, it was a tough start yesterday in particular. But once Umbalaler had won, you came out and won on a 50-1 shot the very next drive, pretty much. So certainly there seems to be a good chemistry between you and Anton. Obviously, you communicate pretty well, and it's all working beautifully at the moment.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, you've got to have great chemistry in any great partnership, and I find him really easy to drive for, along with Pat. You know, they're very sort of easygoing, and usually just leave the driving up to me, which makes my job a hell of a lot easier. You know, you don't have to go out there with the 101 instructions, and you're always second-guessing yourself. I sort of go out there with a clean head, which, you know, makes it my job a hell of a lot easier. And, you know, I've sort of got faith in their ability to get their horses right on the day. And, you know, all in all, that makes a big difference.
Let's go to the race itself now quickly, Zachary. The Victoria Trotters Derby. We know that Anton had a few horses in there, the most spruiked of them being Dance Crazy. It led on its ear, so it showed really good gate speed. We know Umbalaler is already a multiple Group 1 winner. We know she's a superior stayer. At what stage in proceedings, I mean, you just speak about having a clear plan going out there. Did you think to yourself, I'm probably going to have to hope the pressure goes on from somebody else? Or were you immediately thinking, I know I've got the established powerful stay here in Umbalaler. I'm going to go up and have a look for the lead as early as I possibly can.
Yeah, I mean, you can never really be too confident in those sorts of races. But I know, you know, Anton and Pat had big raps on Dance Craze and sort of seemed to think she was, you know, the benchmark filly. But I was just that confident with my filly. I mean, my filly had the runs on the board and sort of was the established Group 1 winner, where sort of Dance Craze was sort of the new kid on the block. So I sort of went out there with the plan to put it to it early and, you know, make a race of it. And I sort of had an inkling. I thought she might, you know, want to take a sit and outdash me, because my filly's probably shown that she's more dour than what she is fast. But, yeah, I didn't think I was going to be sort of... I thought I'd get shuffled too far back if I just sat outside and the run's come, and I didn't want to be wide on the last bend. So I thought if I'm going to be a chance, I really just had to force the issue early, and luckily enough, I found the front, and I got a pretty easy time of it after that.
Now, as you know... All too well, Zachary. You move on pretty quickly in this game. You have your Group 1 successes. You might have a couple of craft siders afterwards, and after that, you've got to move on pretty quickly. We need some winners for tonight. You've actually got a very short book. You'll be home nice and early to have some dinner with the missus, but you've got two drives early doors, Chic and Rock and Amelia's Courage. They both look winning hopes. Amelia's Courage was very, very good last start. Obviously, has to take on the unbeaten filly Nostra Villa tonight. What are your expectations? What can you lead us into?
Yeah, I thought Amelia's Courage was fantastic last week. Really, you know, only beaten a short half head by her. You know, it's going to be an interesting race early. I haven't spoken to Pete or the connections of Amelia's Courage as to, you know, whether if we find the front, we hold it and leave that one outside us and make a race of it, or whether, you know, we take a sit and just try to outdash it. I'm not sure, but there's no doubt it's going to be a great race between the two of them. They sort of look the only two real winning chances, I thought. You know, you know, she's racing really well, and Pete sort of always seems to have them ready to go for these nice type of races.
And finally, mate, after you won the Group 1 race on Sunday, I was fortunate enough to run into your better half, Taylor Nicholson, and she sort of said to me, look, you know, another success for the team. What are we going to do with the proceeds here? And she sort of spoke about cars. Audi Q7 was a name that came up. I'm just wondering, will she be achieving that sort of a goal? Will there be some funds spiralled into potentially that sort of a car? Are we looking at something a little more modest? What's the message for Taylor? What's she getting?
Well, I mean, I think Taylor thought just because I drove on Balloa, I'd get all the prize money and not 5%. So we might get her a 2004 RAV4 if she wants a car that bad.
A 2004 RAV4, all right. Hopefully Taylor's not listening. Thanks very much for your time this morning, and well done, Zach.
Thanks, JB. Thanks, guys.
All right, there's Zach Phillips, and some bad news there at the tail end for Taylor Nicholson there. A RAV4, maybe 12 or 13 years old. Another one of the group winners on Sunday, Redwood Day at Maryborough, was the puppet, Chris Alford. Hopefully he's on the line to join us now. Good morning, puppet.
Good morning, Jase.
Now, first of all, I'm going to say congratulations. We'll get to this mini controversy afterwards, but congratulations with Wobbly. What a two-year-old season it has been from this horse, and he absolutely thrashed his rivals yet again on Sunday.
Yeah, it's been pretty amazing, really. He, he doesn't show you much at home, and to do what he does on the racetrack is, just pretty unbelievable, really.
Yeah, let's quickly get to this so that we can get past it very quickly. Obviously, there was a fair bit of social media chat about sprint lanes and what might have happened at the start of the Redwood Classic yesterday. You want to clear it up for us?
Oh, well, I didn't have a problem with it, other people seemed to, but I just happened to be jogging around behind the one horse in the warm-up and saw Christian stand it up, and it just jumped sideways and went about four carts to the right, and I thought, oh, well, if I'm moving up at the right time and it jumps right, I'll just be straight through, and that's what happened. It did a right-hand turn at the start, and we were able to lead, and that was the end of the story.
I agree. That is the end of the story.
You know, if he went in the sprint lane, the stewards would have pretty much quickly had a look at it and taken it off him, I would say, but didn't happen.
No, and hopefully, as has been mentioned on social media, we get that footage because it's a complete non-issue as far as I'm concerned. Absolutely smashed his rivals, as we've just mentioned. Just going back to the horse, and you speak about the fact that he doesn't show you a hell of a lot at home, and I guess, I've spoken to you about this on a number of occasions, that he's been mentioned as being, better than potentially an average group of two-year-old trotters. But at the end of the day, now the record that he's built up, this is actually one of the most dominant and outstanding seasons from a juvenile trotter we've seen virtually ever. So at some stage, we sort of have to put our hands up and say, this bloke's the real deal. He has had a season that very, very few horses in the past have had.
Yeah, well, that's true. he's won 8 out of 10 now, and you look back at the records. I was looking at Noopy's record the other night, and he won 7 out of 8. And unfortunately, lost the Redwood through no fault of his own. But it's something pretty special, really. He's won 3 Group 1s and a Group 2 now, and hopefully he can just progress his next 2 starts and win them, and then have a good break. But pretty amazing, really. We never thought here that he'd reach these heights.
It's funny you mentioned that. It's exactly what I did on the locomotive in here today. I had a look at Noopy's record and thought it would be... I thought if any horse of recent times is probably going to have a superior record, it would have been Noopy. But you look through it, and as you've mentioned, probably, head-to-head, that Wobbly's even gone better than Noopy. Now, we know what an outstanding young trotter Noopy was as a 2- and 3-year-old, but to think that has happened is pretty incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the thing was, I think he only had 6-7 starts as a 2-year-old. Compared to Wobblies, he's going to end up probably having 12. But he's won all the races that count. So it's something that'll be hard to top in the future. That's for sure.
Talk to us about his white line fever too, Papa, because he is a horse. I've seen him out on the track on a couple of occasions. He looks like he can get relatively revvy. I suspect just before the start, he looked fine yesterday, but maybe 10 or 15 minutes earlier than that, he was potentially, in a little bit of a mood. And he goes out on the track and he just seems to do everything so professionally once he goes out there, whether it's a mobile or a stand. Now, are you at the point now when you go out on the track with him or 10 minutes or 15 minutes before, even if he is playing up, you're so confident that he'll just do the right thing when he gets out there, or does he still sort of worry you when if he's playing up before the start?
No, well, the thing is, he's, like I said, he's had the 10 starts and he's only just made one little canter in the score up one night. And his main problem is he's just such a lamb. He stands there all day, wouldn't turn a hair, but as soon as you put the card on him, he knows it's, time to go. And he just wants to get out there and run. And he gets a little bit fractious at the start, just wants to... Main problem is he doesn't like to circle round and wants to spin backwards. He's put me through the fence 4 times at home in reverse and things like that. But, with his gait and whatever, there's never a problem once he's moving forward and on the way.
Well, as I just said to Zach, no matter what happens in this sport, Group 1 wins and all the rest, you have to move on pretty quickly. And you've got a couple of outstanding steers in Breeders' Crown qualifiers this evening. You didn't have to make a choice on this occasion. You're driving both Nostra Villa and Molly Kelly, of course, Nostra Villa undefeated. Both horses going really well. Obviously, they're massive winning chances tonight. Head-to-head right now, we sort of have we all had to come to terms with the fact that Nostra Villa is the benchmark, or have you still got a lot of faith in Molly Kelly as a racehorse?
Yeah, probably there's not a lot between them. Like Nostra Villa beat her by a head last start. She's probably a little bit better racehorse. She can sort of race anywhere, where Molly is a bit like her sister Frith and has a few little quirky issues. And she's probably better from behind, which is hard to do when you're in a one-on-one race like last time. I had to sort of hold the front. But I think eventually, you know, sitting on the speed is much more her go, where the other one can lead, she can park, or she can come from back in the field. So, you know, nothing between them. They're both great fillies, but, you know, the draws will probably sway it sort of moving forward.
And in terms of tonight, very disappointed if both of them don't get the job done?
Yeah. Like, you know, there's a couple of unknowns with the Kiwis and that coming over, and we know Amelia's Thorough races really well. But I think they both should be winning tonight.
All right, Puppet, thanks very much for joining us, mate, and congratulations to you and also to Alison on the win of Wobbly, and hopefully he can just keep winning towards the end of the season. As you mentioned, he's got a couple more targets left to go, and hopefully he can continue on his winning way, mate.
Yeah, thanks, JC. Seems it pulled up good. The run didn't worry him, and he'll have a quiet week till he's fit next week.
Cross fingers for the Crown. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Jason.
All right, there's Chris the Puppet Alfred, who, of course, was another one of the Group 1 winners on Sunday at Maryborough. One man who didn't win a Group 1, but I'll tell you what, it was the highlight of the day for me watching the champion Keystone Dell win the free-for-all on Redwood Day at Maryborough. And joining us now is his trainer, Brent Lilly. Good morning, Lils.
How you going, Jase?
Very good, thanks, mate. This was the highlight of my day. I just couldn't believe, every single time he turns up for a preparation, you think to yourself, the last 2 years you've been going to the track, and somebody's rocked up to you and said, this horse is nearing the end, you know, I don't think there's too much left in the tank with Keystone Dell. And then he turns up first up from a break and blows his rivals away. So fortunately, he can't hear all the naysayers, because as I say, it's been going on for about 18 months or 2 years, and he just turns up and keeps winning.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. He's an older horse now, and we all know, you know, nothing lasts forever. So, it was pleasing to get him back, it was a great win. But in saying that, no disrespect to the opposition, but certainly, you know, over the free-for-alls coming up over the next, few months are going to be stronger again. So, he's going to have to come on from that run, which I'm sure he will.
What are the challenges overall? I mean, I don't want you to go through necessarily with a fine-tooth comb every little thing you have to do to manage him, but is it a range of issues that he has at this stage of his career? Because he's been a warrior for so long, he's done things so tough, and he's won so many major races. Is it one or two things right now you just have to really concentrate on to make sure you're going to get him out there at his best, or is it a range of little niggles and you just have to be on top of him day to day?
Yeah, I mean, he's got a lot of issues, and sort of one and another one of the oval sort of thing. So he takes a lot of looking after and managing, and he's good at the moment. Everything's holding pretty good, but there's always in the back of your mind. You don't know every morning you're bringing out is one of those horses that's there. It's always a lot of little things there that you've got to keep an eye on.
I'll play devil's advocate with you, Lils, and we might just see if you can, if you've gone for a little wander to move back where you were, just cutting out slightly there. But I'll just play devil's advocate for a moment, because I thought one of his, the best runs of his career almost, to be honest, was first up from a break in the True Roman Trotters Free-for-All in October last year. Then it was a little bit worse to his next run, and he deteriorated badly at his run after that. So being an older horse and being able to come in fresh and feeling good about his body, he can come off the pace and produce these big performances. Have you got any little concern that it'll knock him around this run? I sense from speaking to you and even what you're telling us this morning that he's come through the run really well, and you're actually expecting him to go the other way, only get better from the run.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a little bit hard to know. He's had a couple of quiet days since the run, but he jogged fine this morning, and yeah, I mean, my intentions are he can run around in the free for all on Saturday night at Melton. I mean, providing we get through the week good, I can't see any reason why he shouldn't go round. And yeah, I think just a little bit of racing. You know, there's free for alls every 2 or 3 weeks, and now we've got him sort of back up to where we want him. If we can just manage him in between times, I'm sure there's still a little bit left in the tank there for us.
And look, he wouldn't have known himself so rarely in his career. He's had a 3-wide cut into a race and been the one that's been able to stalk and use a little bit of his speed. But having had a brief chat with you yesterday, that's not his life. He was first up from a break. You wanted to drive him relatively conservatively and give him not too hard a run. He was obviously ultra impressive, but it won't be too long if he gets that fitness back into him that he'll be back to playing bully pretty soon.
That's right. It was just I think it was important first up that he just didn't get hurt, and it played into our hands with a bit of speed up front. So, but no, I'm sure once he's had a run or that run and maybe another one, or we'll leave it up to Ants anyway. But we know he likes to race up on the pace and he can run out good sectionals up there. So I'm sure that once he's fully wound up. He'll be probably back driven how we all know he can be, yeah.
All right, so we know the champ is back. That's terrific. And a couple of the other big guns in the stable are also back racing, Kai Valley Blur and Maori Time. But it seems to me the whole team's going spectacularly well at the moment. Is there a young one around the place, I'm not saying going to be the next Keystone Dell, but that you're a bit excited about, that's one that we can follow?
Look, I've got a lot of time for a horse that he's actually in the paddock at the moment, but I think in 12 months' time he'll be a really good horse. Is a horse called Enrolled, who
yes.
He's a really strong horse and he's got a big motor. So I think a couple of years down the track, I don't think we'll ever find one to replace Keystone Dell once he's gone, but he's certainly going to be a good horse, I think.
I'm tipping with his likely staying prowess, he's one you wouldn't mind going home with at some point if everything went to plan over the next year or two.
With Enrolled, yeah. Well, look, he's a great stayer, and he's still got to step up again, but he can run out good sectionals now, and he hasn't been trotting all that long. He's swapping over from a pacer, but he's got a very bright future, I'd say.
All right, well, congratulations with the champion, Keystone Dell, and we'll keep an eye on Enrolled for the next year or two, Lil. Thanks for your time this morning, mate.
Good on you, Jase. Cheers.
All right, there's Brent Lilly. I think we're pretty much through the ones that made a big impression on Redwood Day, but hopefully one man who he also drove a winner on Redwood Day in Desert Flyer, and luckily he did. I made him my best roughie on the program. But Greg Sugars, who pierced the 200 wins mark for the sixth season in a row last weekend, is on the line, hopefully. Candyman, are you there?
I'm here, Jase.
Hello, mate. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
As I mentioned, six in a row for the 200, seventh altogether that you've pierced 200 winners. And everyone, I guess at the start of every season, it can be a bit of a grind. You've got to have goals in mind. And I guess this would have been one that you wanted to achieve this season?
Yeah, that's right. From the first time that I was able to crack that figure, I sort of thought, this is pretty good going. And if I can aim for that every year, you're sort of going okay. So... I had a bit of a shaky start to the season, and halfway through I thought, well, I might miss out this year, but thankfully the second half of the season has been quite successful.
And not far from the $2 million stake either. I don't know whether you've got your next motivator once you get to the 200 wins. You've obviously got almost a month to get through, and Breeders' Crowns to look forward to as well, but that can be your next motivator. You're about $1.9 million, I reckon. So for the last 4 or 5 seasons, you've been able to pierce that prize money goal. So there's another little carrot for you.
Yeah, another target for me to keep me going for the last month of this season.
Now, let's get to this wonderful horse who won again on the weekend, TCB McRae. This is a very special horse, isn't it?
Yeah, he is. Look, he's just mainly, the backstory on the horse with, the long-standing owners of Alan Tubbs that, a couple of them, one in particular, is not in the best of health, and even Alan himself, is starting to wind down his team and his health. He's had his fair share of battles over the years, and to sort of come across a horse like this late in the game for them all is something that's really special, and it's really giving them a real kick along and a great buzz.
So we'll just quickly go through those issues for the uninitiated. He was flipping a pallet and potentially, well, certainly actually, cutting his wind off in his races. And he was a much maligned horse. Everyone knew how talented he was early doors, Gregory. But sometimes it would appear to the naked eye or to the uninvested punter or to the invested punter that he wasn't finishing his races off, you know, in a 100% genuine manner. But it seems in the three runs back, this preparation, the little operation that he's had to rectify that issue seems to have worked a treat. He does look a different horse at the end of his races.
Yeah, that's right. No, it was something he battled, you know, really for probably the last 18 months racing career, that off and on, he slipped his pallet. Hard to diagnose exactly to what extent it was affecting him. And, you know, surgery was looked at quite some time ago with no real guarantees. There's never really a guarantee of this sort of thing, and with the possibility of you know, spending a significant amount of money and possibly making no difference, maybe even making it worse, and that sort of thing. So it was put off for quite some time. Eventually got to a stage where enough was enough. The level of the horse was trying to compete at, he was you know, either had to stand up and be counted or forgotten to some extent. So they bit the bullet and did the surgery, and touch wood, at this stage it's gone very, very well, and we've seen some terrific results. You know, three runs back and he's hit the line better each run, so he's certainly heading in the right direction. And touch wood, all remains well with his breathing issues. You know, you should see a very consistent and competitive horse wherever he goes.
Does he feel different? Because, you know, just watching him the other night, how early he hit the front, he just pulled himself to the top and he ran right away from his rivals. And that's what I guess everyone who has always had a big opinion of the horse, including myself, has wanted to see him do. So out on the track, does he actually feel like a different horse these days as well?
Not so much, not just yet. You know, but I was very pleased that he actually put a space on some decent horses once he went to the front, which is something, you know, he hasn't done for a very long time in his career. So that was pleasing that he did get run away from them and hold that margin for nearly the whole way to the line. So yeah, that was very pleasing. But you know, he's been doing that for quite some time now, where he's been obviously shutting his air off when you ask for 100% exertion, and would obviously flip the pallet and run out of oxygen. And by the time he got, you know, three quarters of the way down the lane, he was sort of pulling up. And whereas now he it appears that he's keeping that oxygen flow going right to the line. So he should get better and better the more racing he does now, if all stays well.
All right, fingers crossed we get into that Breeders' Crown Graduate free-for-all, and also double fingers crossed, maybe toes as well, the Victoria Cup. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Gregory.
No worries, Jaylon.
There's Gregory Sugars. That pretty much wraps us up, Cozzy, for On The Pace. That was a Redwood Day recap. We've got the Breeders' Crown coming up, so I'll be in for the next couple of weeks, and hopefully we'll be looking forward to all the Breeders' Crown action and then reviewing it once it's done and dusted. But hopefully we made an all right start, Cozzy.
Good on you. Talk to you next week.
Sounds good, mate.
Thanks, Chase. Cobbley Equine Farm, standing, bling it on, bringing you On The Pace.